this is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, how you doing on this Saturday?
Doing better. Yeah, a little bug came through our house earlier this week. First few days of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we were all just kind of down and out a little bit. So had to work through that. Had to turn down an invite to the Thunder game Wednesday night. That was a bummer. But yeah, we're all feeling better and on the mend. So doing well. Having a good weekend. How are you?
I know you're not doing well if you're not going to a Thunder game. You're the biggest Thunder fan I know. That's disappointing. Well, but hey, it is the time of year. We've had allergies just run rampant through here. Sydney's been coughing for ages. All the girls have been stuffed up. But, you know, yours truly just strong like bull, as my man Trabe says. Just strong like bull. No allergies for me. I used to think allergies
for you.
I will say this, though. I used to think allergies when I was younger, in my 20s or so, were just for people who are weak-minded. And then I lived in a neighborhood that had a ton of Bradford pears, and I've had allergies ever since. It's like those Bradford pears just infected me for good. It's like a forever coronavirus. So I do get allergies now, and I do think they're very real. And I'm getting a crash course of it here at home.
So that made me think and compare you to Cam Scataboo, who was like, yeah, asthma. What are you doing with asthma? Just breathe. Just breathe. What are you doing? You're Cam Scataboo in this scenario.
Well, you know, when you're in your 20s, your frontal cortex hasn't fully formed yet. You think you're a lot smarter than you really are, and you have a lot of hubris. So that was just a dumb Western Oklahoman upbringing from like my parents of just being tougher than allergies. But that's caught up to me, and it's caught up to us, the house. But Colby, this can be a positive show, man. We have a lot of really positive Oklahoma State news to talk about. I know sometimes people think we can be curmudgeons. This will not be a curmudgeon show, except I do have one bone to pick with the university, which we'll get to a little later in the show. But first, let's hear from Chris's University Spirit. And, you know, I had to get rid of the 231, Section 2, no shirty 1, because our boy Eric Morris put the kibosh on Section 231. Were we winning too many games to be worrying about one section of fans taking their shirt off, being goofy, and trying to make the best of a bad situation? It's like, we're going to be too good, Colby. We're not gonna need this no shirt section. So stop by Chris's, get a shirt to wear and not twirl it around your head. It was fun while it lasted, Colby. But what'd you make of that? I kind of like it. I was like, look, it was cute. It was fun. It had its moment. But we're a big-time football program. We're going to act like it.
Yeah, that's how it came off to me. It's like, this is something that you all were doing to get yourselves through some very dark times. And that was fun. I'm glad that y'all did that. Congrats on finding a way to endure through the pain. We're not going to have pain to endure in my tenure as Oklahoma State head coach. This is a big-time football program. And it's just, I think, I don't want to use the word professionalization because that word is very loaded and charged whenever it comes to collegiate athletics. But I just think, for lack of a better term, the professionalization of the program and extending that to the fan base, like, we're here to win games. Y'all are going to have plenty to get fired up about. You're not going to need a distraction up in the corner of the stadium from what's happening on the football field, which is more or less what Section 231 was.
Yeah, no, I like it. Again, let Kansas, who's the worst team in the Big 12 this year, you think? Colorado?
Oh, top of my head, Colorado probably.
So let one of those bottom feeders have the one guy alone in a section twirl his shirt. We're gonna be busy winning games. And I think we got a really good sneak peek at what this team is going to look like last weekend at the spring game. I did want to talk about that with you and just kind of your general takeaways. Of course, it was not on television. I think that's a big miss. I think a lot of networks would be willing to put an Oklahoma State spring game on television, especially with all the hype they have around them. I mean, ESPN ranking them as the number one portal class, the number three coaching hire in all of the country with Eric Morris, but that's neither here nor there. But I think just generally, Obviously, Mestemaker started slow, had a really good day. But to me, Colby, it just felt like Oklahoma State football was back in terms of the style of play on offense. Nothing felt overly difficult. The offense ran very smoothly. They scored points. And I think we kind of – what's odd is Mike Gundy kind of popped into my head a little bit watching Mestemaker just sling it around. There was so many years there, Colby, where we didn't really care who the quarterback was going to be, who the offensive coordinator was going to be, who the offensive line was going to be, because we just knew that Mike Gundy would roll the ball out there and they would be one of the better offenses in the Big 12, if not the country. And I think that's where Mike got a lot of his hubris from towards the latter years of his coaching tenure, is he just presumed that he knew best, he knew ball, and he was going to keep scoring points. Well, that didn't happen, but it was a good reminder for me to see, oh, yeah, this is what it's like to just kind of like that famous picture of Gundy when he was rocking the mullet, just kind of sitting over there, just lounging. Like, that's kind of how I felt watching some of the spring game highlights, Colby. Just felt like our program is back to where it's supposed to be, where we're going to score a lot of points, we're going to be entertaining, and we're going to win games.
Yeah, I scrounged the internet for as much of it as I possibly could. I had a golf tournament last Saturday, so I couldn't get up there. It was a bummer that it wasn't televised. I mean, we can't get on the CW, the CW app. Hit up the folks at CW. They'll put anything on the air. So, yeah, that was a bummer, but as much of it as I could consume, I did. Thoughts. Chris Barnes, really fast. Justin Bowick, really big. Drew Mestemaker, really talented. It's just there are a lot of reasons for Oklahoma State fans to be really excited going into 2026. It's just, like you said, it feels like what Eric Morris has done on the offensive side of the ball in his coaching career has been very plug and play. And that has been at the level from Incarnate Word up through North Texas. And I hope that that continues through Oklahoma State and that the Cowboys are able to have that roll forward with Mestemaker and those guys. But yeah, it was awesome to see the highlights. And Chris Barnes to me was the big surprise. He's a smaller guy. They said they've been running him on the outside in the spring. He talked about the fact that he and Mestemaker had to spend some time getting on the same page. But yeah, I hope that he's able to be utilized throughout the season because his speed is different. It's track speed.
Yeah, for sure. I'm taking you to the unofficial statistics. Marshall Scott has this up on Pistols Firing Blog. As you see here, Drew Mestemaker, 13 of 20, 260 and 3, which would be just, God, we would have, like, we don't even know what that looks like anymore based on what we've seen the last 2 years on offense. It's just, wow, 260 and 3, that's nice. Forgot what that felt like. Not much in the way of rushing, that most of their damage was done through the air. And like Colby mentioned here, for 141, Chris Barnes stealing the show from the North Texas kids. Miles Coleman, Wyatt Young, relatively quiet, although Young and Bowick did score touchdowns. But yeah, I think Chris Barnes stole the headlines there with four for 141 for sure. And then defensively too, like I like a lot of the pieces they've added, Colby. I think for me, the name you see here, or the two names at the top, Ethan Weslowski, who's the leading tackler from North Texas, and LaDainian Fields, to me, perhaps in my mind, might have been the most important, you can't call it an acquisition because they kept him on the roster, but most important portal retainee for me defensively. I think those two names there you see at the very top, along with Jahlil Johnson, really those three there, to me, those three will have to have big years for OSU's defense to meet the standard of the offense, and I think really enhance their chances of competing for a Big 12 championship.
Yeah, no doubt. And it was weird, the scoring system, the way it worked. It's like they were allocating points to the defense for interceptions, for stops, things like that. The offense got off to kind of a slow start. The defense got out to a lead, and then the offense came back and won the game. They've had some injuries on the offensive line. Didn't feel like they had the depth to do full two teams, an orange team and a white team. So they just went offense versus defense. But yeah, whatever Skylar Cassidy is able to do on that side of the ball is going to largely dictate the ceiling of this team. I think the offense dictates the floor, right? I think that this team is going to have to win minimum 6-7 games just because they're going to score so many points. Can they win 10 games? that's Skylar Cassidy and those guys on that side of the ball have to decide what the ceiling is, because at some point there are going to be teams in this conference that are going to be able to score with you. Can you slow them down enough and get enough stops that you can win some games, 38-31 and not have to score 50 to win? I hope that's the case, because if the defense winds up being a pleasant surprise this year, if they're a top half of the conference defense, it's not totally unrealistic to think that they could score enough points to win 10 games. But I'm going to have to see some things to believe them on that side of the ball, because ever since Jim Knowles left, it's just been a steady decline to what we've seen, where Oklahoma State was just pretty much unserious on that side of the ball. I understand second half of last season they did better. They had some decent showings, but those were largely in games that were not really ever in jeopardy for the other team. This is going to be serious competitive football that's being played this year, where the wins and losses, the fourth quarters of these games get tight, and all of these close things really matter. And if they can be good enough on that side of the ball, that's what elevates the ceiling for this team.
Totally. I think that's going to be the biggest question mark moving forward. But you know what helps me, Colby, is, you know, you and I talk so much on this show and just in general via text, things like that, about OSU. It helps me to talk to people who aren't as in tune with things. So I went out to dinner after I'm now coaching I-9 11, 12-year-old girls volleyball. Our coach was nowhere to be found week one, so yours truly stepped up. I'm coaching volleyball now in the I-9 level. And after our game last night, we did not win, but they've made big strides since game one. I've really locked in. I've really got me and my fellow coach, Mitch Tyre, and I have got them whipped into shape. But afterwards, we went out to dinner. And this couple asked me, just, is OSU going to be any good next year? Are they going to win any games? Like, it's been so sad lately. And, like, I was like, yeah, they're going to be really good. And I started listing just general items for them to know. Like, they got this coach who did an amazing job at North Texas. This Drew Mestemaker quarterback led the nation in passing. By the way, they won 11, 12, whatever games last year. They basically brought... I just started kind of going down the list, Colby, and as I was talking this out in my head, I'm like, you know, if you just break this down in layman's terms, like, why shouldn't OSU compete for the Big 12 championship this year? Like, when really you start, because I think you and I, when we do this show, we're afraid of our freezing cold takes being brought out. But if you just look at it realistically, this is the best quarterback they've had since Mason Rudolph, at least. And... you look at what North Texas did with bringing all those, like, it just kind of helped me to, like, just try and lay this out as simply as I can. It's like, oh, like, what? This isn't rocket science. They should probably win 10 games and be in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, one thing I've cautioned other people about when we're talking about the over-under and how many games they're going to win, you're not playing Tulsa, Northwestern State, and SWASU in the non-con. You've got Oregon coming to town. So a lot of years you can count on three in the non-con. This year you're probably only counting on two in the non-con. So we have to factor that math in a little bit, and then nine conference games on the back end of that. But look, the Big 12, it's not some sort of juggernaut. We're not turning on the NFL draft these last few days and just seeing tons of Big 12 names being rattled off the board. This is a conference that has a lot of parity. And I think that there have been some teams in this conference go toward a more balanced style. It's not the Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph Big 12 that we all got used to for so many years. This is a conference where 24 points has won you a lot of football games these last few years. And I do think that Eric Morris and these guys coming back in, you know, the way football is played, it happens in basketball, it happens in all sports, there's these pendulums that swing, right? And it has swung too far to the offensive side, and the defense is caught up. And now the offenses, I think, are starting to adjust back to all these things that the defenses have figured out over the last decade. And Eric Morris could be at the forefront of that. So, I think the biggest thing keeping us from really picking Oklahoma State to contend to win the Big 12 title is just the full reprogramming of the brain that has to be done after what we've watched the last two seasons. And I've been there in person for a lot of those games. It has not been pretty. And I do think that there's a little bit of hesitation inside all of us to think, okay, North Texas was great. These guys were great at North Texas. How does that look when you go into, I don't have the schedule in front of me, Manhattan, Ames, Lubbock, Waco. How does that look whenever you go into these places? So those are kind of the two hesitations that people have. My expectations for this season are really wide. I think 7-5 is in play. If they went 11-1 And we looked back at it and we're like, yeah, they're scoring 45 points a week. Of course they won 11 games. That would make sense too. So my range of outcomes for this team are really wide.
Yeah, like I think there's two factors too that I don't think are discussed enough with the NIL era in the Big 12 is like, think about what OSU's schedule was in 2010. You had OU, Texas, A&M, Tech. I mean, and then you had, you know, the better teams from the north side of the Big 12 back in the day too. Like now you get Tulsa, Oregon, of course, you mentioned, Murray State. The new Big 12 just doesn't scare you. What at West Virginia, Central Florida, at Houston, Colorado, at Iowa State, at K-State, Texas Tech, at Arizona State, Kansas. Like, what? That's completely doable. Like, I know they've got a long way to go and they've all the caveats you just threw out, but this is not the same gauntlet it used to be. As big of a Big 12 guy as I am, like you mentioned, I can look at the NFL draft, I can look at the schedule here, and I think that's an added element in addition to Eric Morris and everyone. What are you doing there? Are you like doing some mixed concoctions there? A little scientist, a little biochemist there, Colby Powell, for those watching on YouTube?
So my wife is gone. My daughter is supposed to be asleep. She came out of her room at nap time with her little bottle here asking for a refill. I obviously cannot get up and go to the kitchen, so I'm gifting her some of my water. She wanted to come in here and say hi, but she does not have pants on, so I stiff-armed her and kept her off the camera. So.
Good call. Yep. Go back to sleep.
Mid-podcast refill. Yes.
Hey, we all need refills sometimes. So anyway, I was just kind of railing on the schedule element as well, Colby. There's a lot of reasons to be bullish on this team this year. Any more thoughts from the spring game? You want to move to the portal?
Let's go to the portal, man. It was a good week for the portal. It was exciting.
Yeah, where do you want to start? Men's, women's? Let's start with J.C. Hoyt, right? I mean, just getting another... A few other just big time players. I mean, you followed this a little closer than I am, so why don't you lay it out for me? Audie Crooks, the center from Iowa State, which reportedly is getting, I don't trust any of these reports that she's getting over $1 million, $1.5 million, which is, you know, half would be, put her up in the highest paid athletes in Stillwater up there nearly besides Drew Mestemaker. Like, I don't know if I believe that or not, but hey. Clearly, J.C. Hoyt's got some NIL money. She's getting a lot of really good, talented players.
Yeah, every time I see one of those numbers leak, whether it's Drew Mestemaker or Audie Crooks, my first thought is, who's the agent who's trying to get their next player a little bit more and get themselves paid? I always believe that numbers are leaked by agents. I always think it's in self-interest. I always think it's to drive up the market. So I never believe the numbers. But some wild numbers have been floated around for Audie Crooks. I don't know if it's pronounced Audie or Audi. I've been pronouncing it Audi like the car because that's just the spelling. So, yeah, Audie Crooks, 26-8 last year at Iowa State. Just absolute domination. We talked about Liv McGill on the pod last week. Also got Nene Ndiaye. I don't know how close I was on that. 15-5 at Rutgers.
Ndiaye.
Okay. Nene Ndiaye. Ellie Brueggemann, 14-3 from Lindenwood. L.A. Sneed, 6-3 from Utah. And then – brought a girl in from D2 to Lexa Weider, 28-9. 28-9, Carson. Some decent size across the board here. Crooks is 6'3". Ndiaye is 6'1". Brueggemann 6'1". To Lexa Weider is 6 foot tall. And then another recruit today, a transfer over from Baylor, a 6'2" guard who averaged 7-2 last year and an assist for Baylor, shooting 37% from three. Like, that's pretty good size to be getting five players in the portal who are 6 foot or taller. Bunch of girls averaging 14 or more, several averaging 22 or more, 25, 27. This is like, I think nationally, the people really covering women's college basketball are looking at Oklahoma State and saying, okay, J.C. Hoyt's trying to elevate this team into the national conversation with what she's doing in the portal, because this is just a stacking of talent. Like, I don't think that we have ever seen on the women's side in Oklahoma State. I mean, maybe, what was her name, Andrea Mitchell? I mean, that was serious talent, and there have been really good teams along the way for Oklahoma State, but this is a stacking of 6-7 players all at once in the portal who can really score. You've got good size. Oklahoma State's going to be a force in the Big 12, and we're talking about putting butts in the seats in GIA. It might be J.C. Hoyt who's the one to do it.
Yeah, like, I think this edition of Crooks especially, Marshall Scott wrote about this on Pistols Firing blog. Like, he wrote that this really kind of changes just what's possible for Oklahoma State Cowgirl basketball. Let's face it, a two-time All-American was Crooks. You know, it's all of a sudden gone from what's happening in Stillwater to I can't wait for next season. All those players you mentioned, Colby, we haven't had this level of excitement now that we see now with all these additions since Kurt Budke, the tournament run you mentioned with Andrea. I mean, it's been a long, long, long time. And I think, again, I said this on the last show, I think it just solidifies what I was hearing behind the scenes, that J.C. Hoyt has done an incredible job of garnering support, and she's putting that support into a top class. So that's exciting for the women's side, and same thing for the men. I think Steve Lutz, the recruiting class is now ranked in the top five nationally as far as high school recruits, and then, of course, they've gotten some really good players in the portal as well. We'll have to see if this translates to wins, but when you're looking at just the steps you have to make the second the season ends for both the men's side and the women's, what you want to see is big name additions, ones you see national correspondents chatting about, both men's and women's are raving about the players that Steve Lutz and J.C. Hoyt have gotten. We'll get into the players that Steve Lutz has gotten too, Colby, but just for me, this is what you want to see is action in the portal, getting players that people covet, and people who are neutral observers say, wow, they got Audie Crooks? Okay, like this changes things, changes a lot of perspectives there. So I'm seeing what I want to see out of both of them.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people in this state, myself included, who have just totally given over all of their basketball fandom to the Thunder and are just waiting for a reason to take some of that energy and give it back to college basketball. I mean, I'm having conversations with guys I play golf with and stuff about the Thunder, about college basketball. One of the guys I play with quite a bit, he's an older guy, he's pushing 60, I think. He talks about how much – he's no U guy. He talks about how much he loved OU basketball 25 years ago and how it was just like – it was marquee viewing and – that he doesn't even watch anymore. He loves the Thunder. He goes to the Thunder games, and OU basketball is a total afterthought. I think college basketball has just been dormant in this state for so long, while the Thunder have been great in this state for so long, that everyone's just kind of given themselves over to the Thunder. But man, give us a reason. Give us one reason to get back to Gallagher Iba and get fired up. I mean, I remember the year Cade was here, being in that building, and that was at what, 25-30% capacity, because that was the COVID year. Whenever Juwan Evans was here packing out GIA, like there were even some of those teams when Joel Embiid would come to town to face Marcus Smart and those guys. Like there have been times, little glimpses where people get excited, but then it just fades so quickly. It's been kind of a slow burn with Hoyt and with Lutz to get here, but it seems like the talent's all kind of merging in Stillwater at one time. Man, please put it together and have it translate to wins, because there's a basketball fan base in Stillwater that's really ready to erupt.
Absolutely. And I mentioned it on the Steve Lutz side of things. He gets Anthony Falesi, a top 40 recruit in 2026. He's committed to OSU. The 6'5 wing may be the best defender in his high school class. Drew significant interest after decommitting from Pitt earlier this month. And Tom Crean tweeted that about Falesi, Draft Express is right. He can take you out with what you're trying to do with his defense. Tremendously competitive. An attacker and a high-level scorer. He can really play. OSU basketball landed a real dude. So, like, I think Falesi raised a lot of eyebrows as far as, like, whoa, that's a big, big, big get for Steve Lutz, in addition to the players he's already added with a lot of experience. Getting a player like that, I think for everyone who's down on Steve Lutz, like, let's give him some time, because he's doing all the right things recruiting-wise. And I think it's more challenging in the NIL era, but it's also easier in a way, if that makes sense. You know, Mike Boynton was having to like be on his private jet and like watching high school games every single night, it felt like, on the road, whereas now NIL makes it a little easier to replenish, and Steve Lutz is, again, I think ticking all the boxes.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And getting Falesi in the door is big, because you've already got these other high school recruits, and you probably don't get Falesi if you don't already have the other guys, because I would imagine these guys have all played on the high school circuits and the AAU circuits together and stuff, and they know each other. And to get this many four stars, this much talent all in at one time, I imagine there's conversations amongst those guys of like, hey, let's go to Oklahoma State. Let's build this thing back up. This can be our team. We can be the class who brings it back. Yeah, this is, it's really exciting. And look, Lutz has been here 2 years. He's been here 2 years. Year one, he was in late, did the best he could in the portal. That team, I think, actually had the soul of an Oklahoma State basketball team a little bit more than maybe this last one. The pieces just never clicked after that 12-0 start this past season. It just seemed like, you know, Lutz kept referring in press conferences to guys wanting to get their own and, you know, needing to play as a team and stuff. And it just didn't feel like the pieces of the puzzle really fit together there. So, yeah, I hope these freshmen can come in and get just a few veteran pieces to sprinkle around them. Just step one, go make the tournament, and then let's figure out step two after that. But, gosh, I hate when those brackets come out and I just want to avoid it because my team once again is not even in consideration. I just go make the tournament and then we'll figure out the second weekend once we get there.
Yeah, let's go make the tournament now, Steve, because you got the, you have 4 four-star prospects, does Lutz. Felesi joins Almond, who's ranked number 24 in the country, Jalen Montanati, who's ranked 98th, and Parker Robinson, who's ranked 130th. They also added 3 players via the transfer portal in Luka Bogovac from North Carolina, Cashi Natt from Sam Houston, and Jacob Walker from Sam Houston. So completely new roster, essentially, for the men and mostly for the women as well. So really good portal season so far for men's and women's basketball. Speaking of the women's side of things, I mean, OSU softball, you know, we kind of wondered what was going to happen this year after all the excitement that Kenny Gajewski had built over the last couple of years. Disappointing season for them last year. But OSU softball is back with a vengeance. They beat Oklahoma, ranked number one in the country. Then they go and take out Texas. Then they go out and beat Baylor. And then they go out and beat Arizona before that. Let's see here. I had the stat pulled up, but Colby, just your thoughts on this.
2 out of 3 from Arizona, yeah.
2 out of 3 from Arizona. Let's see here. I had the stat here. OSU now has 4 wins over ranked opponents in the last 7 days, did they, after beating Texas. They defeated number 1 Oklahoma. They beat Arizona twice, and number 7, Arizona's ranked 16th in the country, and they beat Texas, who's ranked 7th in the country. They have 11 wins over ranked opponents on the season, with 7 of those 11 coming away from home. I mean, that's pretty dang impressive from Kenny Gajewski. The Longhorns were 35-8 overall, ranked 7th in the country, but beating the Sooners for the first time since, I believe it was 2022, the Big 12 Championship Series in 2022. It's the 8th time they've beaten the number 1 team in the nation. It's the first since beating the top-ranked Sooners in the Big 12 Championship game in 22, as I mentioned. And the 4th time OSU has beaten the number 1 team under Kenny Gajewski, with 3 of those wins coming over Oklahoma. So big reason for that, Colby, was Ruby Malin. She was just sensational against OU. And just, again, that's a lot to recap from an amazing week for softball. But it appears that this team looks primed and ready for another trip to Oklahoma City, man. I mean, that's an impressive run through the best that softball has to offer.
Yeah, and that's what we needed to see. We needed to see that this team had that ceiling that we were seeing a couple of years ago, several years ago. I mean, everybody remembers, I think my favorite, trying to think, probably the Samantha Shaw team was my favorite team that came through in the Gajewski era. Team was so much fun, had so much swagger, and the ceiling on that team was really high. Ruby Malin's been unbelievable. That win against OU, that was a late start. Listed at 8, I don't think it started at 8. I think it started like 8:15, 8:30. That was a late night to send a bunch of OU fans home. Really sad and really I mean, that was a big-time upset to go out and win that game 6-4. Oklahoma was ranked number 1 in the country at that time. They lost that spot due to the loss to Oklahoma State. And then to go take 2 out of 3 from Arizona on the road, it's like you didn't just get happy with your Bedlam win. You went out and got another couple of big wins. And I caught the end of that game against Texas. I was kind of keeping an eye on the score, but I wasn't at home. Whenever I got home, I turned it on. And that game was scoreless most of the way. And it's like, all right, who's going to blink first? And it was Texas. And Oklahoma State put 5 on them. I think all 5 might have been in the 7th. Might have had 1 or 2 in the 6th. But I think all 5 were in the 7th in that game. And Oklahoma State just got the win right there at the end. So to have 2 of the best programs in the country, have them walk in here with all their SEC money and all their SEC swagger and send them home upset, that's the kind of stuff that we live for as Oklahoma State fans. It was beautiful. Mwah. Well done, softball.
Yeah, then softball's still rolling, man. They're up 5-0 right now on Baylor in the bottom of the second. They already got 5 hits, 5 runs. Looks like they might sweep Baylor here today. Or I guess what, they've only won. This is game 2, my bad. It's not, I keep thinking today's Sunday for some reason. I'm trying to skip ahead on the weekend. Cowboy baseball leads Texas Tech 3-2. And speaking of baseball, Josh Holliday gets his 500th career win. And I kind of buried the lead too, Colby. Like, I've had several people reach out to me and send congratulations on us doing 700 episodes. But as we mentioned, I have lost count many, many times. I've put in the wrong number several times. So who knows what number it actually is. But this is pretty amazing that, you know, I know you've been part of the show for a long time now. You've probably done a couple hundred, maybe 300, 400 in there. Maybe half of those. I don't know. Who could say? But it's been an amazing experience. And it's kind of scary to think about doing 700 episodes. You start tallying up how much time that's actually spent talking about Oklahoma State sports. And it's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate everyone who's reached out and been very kind and noticing that. But Josh Holliday gets 500 wins. That's probably the bigger deal than this silly little show rolling along. But just wanted to make note of that too as I brought up Josh Holliday's record.
Yeah, that's incredible. People weren't listening for the last 12 years, something like that, is when Kyle started it. 10 years, 12 years. Then it wouldn't have gone on that long. So, yeah, we appreciate the opportunity to do this for so long. And Josh is just, for so long, he's been so consistent and so steady at Oklahoma State baseball. I know that the College World Series heights have not been reached near as often as Oklahoma State fans would like. They've been really good in the Big 12. They've been really good in the Big 12 Conference Tournament. It's special for him to go out and get his 500th win. And this is a big series this weekend against Texas Tech. To go down there, they beat Wichita State by 10 on Tuesday. They come back. Last night they beat Texas Tech by 10 in Lubbock. And then they're up today. It's like, if they can get today's and lock up this series, that gets them back to level in conference. And all of a sudden, Tech starts getting a little nervous that they're going to get swept on their home turf. This is a big series for Oklahoma State baseball and for Josh Holliday. If you go sweep Texas Tech in Lubbock, I mean, look, I know that we thought maybe the Cincinnati series would do it to flip your record and turn your season around, and then they struggled. But this is the first time I've really seen a pulse on the road. Losing 2 out of 3 to Kansas last weekend hurt. Kansas is a good team, top 20 team in the country. So, yeah, if they can go get 2 out of 3 at least from Texas Tech, that's great. 3 out of 3 would be unbelievable and could potentially turn your season around. So congrats to Josh on 500 wins. And for all of those of us baseball fans, just keep crossing your fingers and holding out hope that they can turn this thing around. I still think they have some talent. They've had some injuries, especially in the bullpen. Man, if they could put it together and salvage this season late, it would be huge for Josh and huge for the program.
Yep. Oh, she put out a really cool graphic congratulating 500 wins. And I did notice, too, they had the he gets a Gatorade bath here. That's good stuff. So congrats to Josh Holliday. And again, I know our buddy Ryan Traub will be tweeting us anytime they lose. I agree with you that he needs to start winning some series. I would recommend winning some Big 12 series here moving forward toward the end of the year. But I continue to hear from people that claim to know that Josh Holliday is not in any danger. Now, things can change radically. If he loses out here and doesn't win another Big 12 series moving forward, I think that would change the calculus. But from everything I've heard is he's very well liked up there in Stillwater, and there's no real danger, I would say, based on the people I've spoken with. But again, things can change. But I think people who are our buddy Ryan Traub, who's got the pitchforks. I say he's our buddy. I don't even know him at all. He just tweets at us a lot. Sorry, Ryan, but you do. For those people like him that just claim that it's over and it's time to turn the page and we must move on, I think you're going to be left wanting at the end of the year. I really do.
Look, it's not like the bottom has fallen out of this thing. They haven't become one of the worst teams in the conference, one of the worst teams in the country. They're trying to find themselves again. So I hope they do. I've said it before. I love Josh. I want him to succeed. Obviously, if the bottom does fall out, then you have to make a change. But this team's still battling. So let's let the season play itself out. I've never been one to quickly pull the trigger on coaches in the middle of the season unless the bottom has totally fallen out, getting your teeth kicked in on your home field by Tulsa. But, let's let's wait and let's hope that, Josh can get this thing turned around.
Absolutely. Let's go to the, golf school goodbye. We are a golf school still at Oklahoma State. How are our boys doing out at the PGA? I think the we have two teams of OSU guys. We got Austin Eckroat playing with a Georgia Bulldog, Davis Thompson. But we also have an all-OSU team, Sam Stevens and Zach Boshu, as Colby is just multitasking on a dad level that I have just – I don't think I can reach that level of multitasking. I can barely talk and, like, look stuff up on my computer at the same time. But
it, if you're just listening and you're not watching on YouTube, there is a four-year-old girl just running around my house just needing something from me about every 90 seconds. And oh, I am on mute, and then I'm on loud, and I'm just – we're multitasking, baby. But, yeah, anyway, yeah, Boshu and Stevens – are together. There was something really cool earlier this week with Oklahoma State golf that, we can't disclose yet. We'll talk about that about a month from now. But yeah, big week for the golf team and big week for the guys in the pros who are down there in New Orleans.
Yeah, Eckroat and Davis Thompson are T4, and the all-OSU team of Zach Boshu and Sam Stevens are T8. It's a weird format. It's teams. Guys go like 10 under, 12 under. They shoot 59s, so we'll see. A long way to go there, but I did think it was cool that there was an all-OSU team, and they were getting a lot of Oklahoma State love there as well. But I think the biggest thing that happened this week in golf was the Oklahoma State men's golf team was honored at the White House. Donald Trump hosted several national championship teams at the White House. And it happened early afternoon. I think it was tweeted out by people like Margo Martin, who's Marky Martin's sister. I worked with Marky at Channel 5, kind of a unique connection there. She's one of Donald Trump's aides. She tweeted out the picture of OSU around 4:30. And I noticed, Colby, I was sitting there. It's almost 8 o'clock. And I looked it up. I made sure to look this up before I tweeted anything. But not one tweet from any account affiliated to OSU about this. And it was almost 8 o'clock. It was like 7:50. OSU Athletics hadn't tweeted about it. The university themselves hadn't tweeted about it. OSU Golf themselves hadn't tweeted about it. The only tweet that was put out in the ether from OSU was OSU Men's Golf, Cowboy Golf, retweeted Margo Martin a couple hours after she had posted it. And I sat there and I was like, and look, believe me, Colby, as I was crafting this tweet, I knew anytime you touch anything related to Donald Trump, this is going to go off the rails quickly. I fully expected that, but the reason I think, in my mind, we've gotten to more than 700 episodes of this show is I think everyone tuning in knows that I'm going to call this out. I'm not afraid to critique my own school, to critique my university when I don't think they're doing things the right way. People think I'm a Gundy hater. I was just critiquing things that I didn't think Mike Gundy was doing a good job of. They paid a lot of money to do on certain things. Other things, I thought he was excellent. And I think being real with my audience has served me well, and I think that's the only way to do it. And so I tweeted out there. I was like, OSU's been radio silent on this. Like, I don't care, Colby. And look, I know you probably don't even want to discuss this. I know a lot of people listening hate Donald Trump. I don't really care. I'm politically pretty agnostic, and I'm not here to talk politics. I know you're not here to listen to politics if you're listening to this show. But Oklahoma State sends their men's golf team to the White House. They allow them to go. They're the boss, the school, the president, the athletic director. They greenlight this because as great as Alan Bratton is, he has bosses. And then the school's too ashamed to like promote it, to tweet about it. It's a big freaking deal that one of your national championship teams is at the White House meeting the sitting president. I don't care if it was Barack Obama, Joe Biden, hell, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton, I don't care who the president was. You greenlit them going to the White House, and then you're too ashamed to tweet about it? Turn off the comments on Twitter if you're afraid of some sort of, you know, Twitter trolls coming after you or Facebook troll. If you're worried about any blowback, turn the comments off. I just thought this was beyond weak to me, Colby. I thought it was beyond weak. It was silly. Like, and then what's really funny though is I tweet this out, Colby, at 7:50. OSU Golf tweets out a tweet about an hour later saying, with a few pictures. And then OSU Athletics retweets it. And so, like, you know, a few hours later, people aren't following that close. They see my tweets. Like, I seen them tweet about it. I saw it all over socials. What are you talking about, Carson? You moron? It's like, no, go check the timestamps. This school, our school, Oklahoma State, sent their golf team to the White House and then was too chicken you know what to tweet about it. That's weak. And I don't know who made that decision up at OSU, but you should be ashamed of yourself, because it's a big honor. And I don't care if you hate Donald Trump with the fire of 1,000 suns. This is bigger than politics. You're meeting the sitting president of the United States as a national champion. You promote it and you tweet about it, Colby. So there, I'm off my soapbox now.
Yeah, no, you're good. I was very late to this controversy. Like I said, I was under the weather. You texted me about it, and I didn't even know what you were talking about. I didn't know the team had been to the White House.
That's probably OSU's fault. You didn't know that, right? I mean, you probably would have saw something. The school was promoting it.
Well, I mean, no, I really wasn't on the internet like pretty much all week. So when you texted me about it, then I went and saw
your
it.
Your mom would have texted you a picture. If they had tweeted probably. It out, your mom probably. Would have saw yeah, it on yeah, OSU's okay. account and would have tweeted or would have texted you and said, look at this. Our
right.
boys My are mom, at the White House. How cool is that?
My mom keeps me informed on most things. So take you through my thought process as I was going through it. My first thought, whenever you sent that, was golf team White House. And I was initially confused because they won the national championship almost a year ago and they're about to go compete for another one. So I was like, are they going to the White House in the middle of their season right before conference championships a year after they won the title? So the timing of it was the first thing that like got my antenna, like what's happening here? So then I figure out what's happening. Let me play devil's advocate with a story from whenever I did social media for Golf Channel. They sent me over to St. Andrews in 2023 to cover the St. Andrews Collegiate. My job was to get pictures, to get videos, to get all these things, and to send them back to the social media team, who would then figure out, gather all the things that they wanted to post. They would get them all posted. And I got to tell you, I took some absolute gold over there. And I'm sitting around, and I'm refreshing the Instagram, and I'm on Twitter, and I'm like, what am I doing? They sent me to Scotland. Where is all this stuff? And the person back in the States who I was sending it to, they were just busy on other projects or living their life or whatever it was. And it took forever for them to get the content that I was sending back out onto the internet. So I don't know what happened. Again, I was very late to this. I wasn't like checking timestamps and stuff like you were. Maybe they were ashamed, but the devil's advocate, give them the benefit of the doubt side of me, says maybe the content got sent back and whoever was supposed to post it had an exam, was taking finals. I don't know. I always am inclined to give people the benefit of the doubt, Carson. I do think it would be very weird if they said, yes, go to the White House, and then we're not going to post anything about it. Like, if you're celebrating the national championship, it is an honor to go to the White House. I don't think for the people that are like, I can't believe the team went. I promise that the team didn't all get around and have a council meeting about their political opinions and then take a vote on whether to go to the White House. It was like, hey, we got invited to the White House. Probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Let's go. Let's celebrate our championship. And they went and they celebrated the championship. I do think that those things should be posted about. I think that team should be celebrated for their accomplishment. The devil's advocate benefit of the doubt side of me says maybe the content being transferred and posted just was not happening in a friendly timeline, if you will. But, again, that's just the optimistic side of me.
I don't think there's an eight-hour time difference between D.C. and Stillwater like there is you in Scotland fair. Versus wherever your producer buddy was.
Fair. Fair. Yeah,
I did find it very interesting that they had 4 hours to post something. And then after I tweeted about it, about an hour later, things start to trickle out very slowly. And again, it was just a courtesy retweet from the athletics page. They had no interest in posting about it themselves. The school themselves, the university, had no interest in it. Look, I get it. Like, Trump's a lightning rod. He's radioactive. And it devolves into just political yelling at each other. I get all that. But this is bigger than that. This is your national championship team going to the freaking White House. Like, what? Like, it's bigger than all that. Like, this is about the team and like them being honored. I don't know. I thought that was so weak. And again, I don't like to get political. I don't really care. Like, me and my wife just choose not to talk about it. Her and I are very far apart politically. So I don't even really get involved with politics much. But I don't care if that loony, that crazy guy in Texas becomes the president. I forget his name, but some crazy left winger is the president. And my golf team is there being honored. Like, I'm promoting the hell out of it. I don't care who the president is. So, all right, I've said enough about that. Any other golf discussions to have?
I do have another quick golf thought, more of a tease on the stuff that we can't talk about yet. But before I get to that, I want to remind everyone that Echo Contracting is on board with us. Echo, Echo, Echo Contracting is a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Should I do the echo every time I read that? Echo, echo, echo contracting. Don't Google it three times. It's just one, but
it's like a borderline dad joke. We'll allow it.
It's like a borderline pun too. It's like, it's right on the line of, is this like a good pun dad joke? Or are people going to get annoyed if I shout echo, echo, echo into the void every time?
I need Eddie and them to send me like I'm afraid I'm going to like show a URL that's not theirs. I'm sure it's the right URL, but I need to like get the video rolling like I do with Chris's University Spirit. So we'll have to, a little inside baseball there. We'll have to get Eddie and them squared away so we can talk about them. So you don't have to just fill dead air with echoes. Let's get a little more visual here for those watching on YouTube. But
I'm
missing something in golf, and I can't remember what it was.
So on the golf side, Carson, they still haven't played since the Mountaineer Invitational. Next thing, I don't have it in front of me. I think they've got one more in the conference championships, and the Nationals is here in about a month. Something pretty cool took place earlier this week with the Oklahoma State golf program. It's going to be incredible marketing around the time the national championship rolls around. So just stay tuned. Everybody knows we love our Oklahoma State golf, and there's some cool things happening with Oklahoma State golf. And this team could obviously easily go out and win the national championship again. I mean, they retained everybody that they had last year. Preston Stout is just an absolute machine. Eric Lee, Ethan Fang, like all these guys. It's just, this team is really special. So hopefully they go back-to-back.
That'd be fun. Is Stout going to get any more exemptions into PGA Tour events that he can, like, win?
Good question. The way those exemptions work, like, amateurs rarely get sponsor exemptions. It happens from time to time, depending on school affiliations and stuff. But a lot of times it works where, like, if you win a specific college event, that event is affiliated with a professional event. Like, there is a Valspar Intercollegiate, and if you win the Valspar Intercollegiate, then you get an invite into the Valspar Invitational. So unless he wins one of those specifics, then it's hard to get those exemptions.
Okay, that makes sense, because – well, look, first things first, you want to win the Big 12. You, of course, you know, want to make a run there. And I think Stout is going to be one of the key names for individual national champion going up against this Jackson Kuiven kid from Auburn. Is just maybe the best amateur to come out since Morikawa and Hovland and Wolf in that class. Data Golf has him, Colby, ranked higher than all of those guys. He's the highest ranked amateur in Data Golf rankings in recent memory. I'm talking 20 years.
Okay.
Just statistically, I think Data Golf does a really good job of, look, other than just where you finished in a tournament, it's hard to judge golfers and it's hard to compare different eras, but I do think strokes gained and Data Golf does a really good job of kind of pinpointing that. And so I think Stout could take him down. Don't get me wrong. I just, Kuiven just keeps on. He's the first golfer since like the 60s to win three straight SEC individual championships. So I think Auburn's a team to watch out for, addition to Kuiven going up against. If we get a Kuiven versus Stout match in match play, that would be, to use your dad joke, Stout.
Yeah, that would be incredible. I'm here for Kuiven v. Stout in match play. I think everybody would be. Yeah, I was a big Nick Dunlap guy whenever he came out. Just his resume, he won the U.S. Junior Am, he won the U.S. Am, and he won professionally, breaking the 35-year drought, whatever, since Phil had won as an amateur. So I was a big Dunlap guy. He has struggled I think he already has two tour wins, but he struggled the last year or so. He's in the running down this week in New Orleans. So him and Gordon Sargent, there's a lot of fun young names in golf. But yeah, Koivun and Stout are the two biggest names I think right now in collegiate golf, and I would love to see those guys in Carlsbad going head to head.
You've been teasing a big deal going on up in Stillwater, and Colby's got the scoop. I can't wait to discuss that more once that news trickles out. So stay tuned to OSU Golf in the coming days, coming months. And Colby, have you gotten your OKGC gear yet? Your Live Golf. There's an Oklahoma team now. Our boy Taylor Gooch, former Oklahoma State Cowboy, has rebranded Team Smash, which was Brooks Koepka's team, was captain. He bounced, went back to the PGA Tour. So Taylor Gooch took over as captain, and they have rebranded as an Oklahoma team. So you got like the South Africa Rhinos, and then you got like the Oklahoma GC Buffaloes, essentially. You got teams just scattered all over the world. It's a look, who knows what's going to happen with Liv, Colby? I think you and I are both dubious. It continues without the Saudi funding. But, hey, Oklahoma's got a professional golf team now. I guess that's pretty cool. I did find one of these tweets that just killed me. I think it was Paolo Ughetti, or maybe it was John Cerruti, one of the guys that works for The Ringer, posted just the banner of Graham McDowell and said, "When I think Oklahoma, ... And like this Northern Irishman named Graham, spelled like G-R-A-E-M-E. Just this complete European in Oklahoma garb. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, nothing Live Golf has done to this point has made sense to me, so why start now? A mid-season rebranding as you are fighting for your life and funding. I've actually heard some rumors that there is going to be some money and somebody's going to buy this league. You know, somebody very wealthy is going to buy this league and keep it going. I don't think it'll go in its current form because obviously nobody really has the money that the PIF has. I mean, Bryson's probably going to want $400 million is the number to come back, and I don't know who other than the Saudis can afford that. And the Saudis, I think it's pretty official now that they're pulling funding after the season, and Liv's going to have to look elsewhere for funding. I think the CEO is a total goober. He's out here like, yeah, Live Golf's not for everybody. If you want to control your schedule and be home with your family, maybe this isn't for you. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? But yeah, it's just, I mean, yeah, sure, it's cool, but I don't know. I'm dubious Live Golf ever reaches the heights that it seemed like they might. Like the day they took John Rahm, it was like, oh my gosh, Live is still here. They're still coming. They've got this agreement. Like they're going to merge. This is going to be a part of golf for the rest of our lives. And I don't know if they do get a buyer after the season, like, I don't know. Is it still around in 5 years, 10, 25, 50? Like I'm pretty confident the PGA Tour is still going to be here in 50 years. Is Live still going to be here in 50 years? Like, I don't know that this is something that's going to be around forever, but in the meantime, I wish Taylor Gooch nothing but success, and hope OKGC is a smash, to use their old team name. Maybe we'll get an Oklahoma City tournament now. They had Cedar Ridge for a while. Maybe somebody in Oklahoma City can host one.
Yeah. Look, I know Taylor a little bit. We used to be members of the same club. I played golf last weekend with two people very close to him. So this one hits home a little bit. And look, the way I view Liv is, if I was Taylor Gooch, and I think Liv Golf has served its purpose, right? Like Jay Monahan, completely asleep at the wheel. The PGA Tour was just doing business as usual, had not innovated, had not evolved in 20 years, and was just fat and happy, and Jay Monahan was collecting $20 million. If I was Taylor Gooch, who was on the outside looking in on the Ryder Cup team, even though he was top 30 in the world at the time he left for Liv, I go to Live 10 out of 10 times. You could turn into, look at Hunter Mahan, for instance, another OSU example. Ryder Cupper, top 10 player in the world, top 15 player in the world, has an injury and completely loses his game and loses his card and is never seen again. Taylor Gooch could fall down tomorrow and break his wrist and never regain the same golf swing. Like, if you're not one of those top 10 guys, perennial Ryder Cupper, you take the money and you figure it out the rest later. I mean, Taylor Gooch has won like $70 million playing in Liv. That's in addition to what I think would be close, you know, to tens of millions of dollars for a signing bonus. I don't think he got more than 100, but if he got anything close to that, he's doing great. So like I view this two ways. One, if I was Taylor, I would have gone. I told him as such. I told his friends as such. It's like, I go. Like, there's no guarantees in golf. And you can set up your kids' kids by going. And that can be true, but this can also be true, is that just LIV hasn't worked. The TV ratings are terrible. There's no value in it. And I'm completely dubious. Without the Saudi money, no one's gotten paid, apparently, reportedly, in Q1. Who's paying John Rahm's salary? Who's paying Bryson's, let alone the Taylor Gooch's and Graham McDowell's of the world? You can claim you're going to get outside funding, but it's not going to be the same agreement all of these guys signed up for without the Saudis and all the money they spent and all the money they were fronting everyone. That's just, I think they're all just kind of playing out the string till they get to the end of the year, and then poof, it's going to just go up in smoke. And at that point, I think Taylor Gooch will have real thinking to do. Does he want to go the Patrick Reed route and grind on the DP World Tour? I'm dubious of that. I think he's made a ton of money. I don't know if he wants to go fight for his PGA Tour card on the lesser avenues anymore or not. Well, that would be remain to be seen. But I do think it's all that can be true, and I can still think it's cool that, you know, there's an Oklahoma LIV team. I just, to me, I think it's kind of done. I just can't see it moving past this year. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, that's my preferred option, not because I don't want those guys to have success, because I want them all back in the same place. Like, I just, golf would be better. Yes, LIV forced the PGA Tour to innovate, and I guess as a disruptor, LIV was successful. But like you said, it hasn't really worked in establishing itself as like, oh, the masses love this and are willing to watch this and pay for it and watch it on TV and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I would just like everybody back in one place. I mean, how much fun would it be to have Brooks and Bryson and Rahm and all those guys competing against each other on the PGA Tour week in and week out?
Yep, for sure. we have a visitor. About time to wrap it up. Colby, appreciate it. Enjoyed speaking with you, and we'll get back with you next week. And who knows? This was a positive show. I've enjoyed this one. Colby, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yep, good stuff. Hopefully we'll be talking about the Thunder advancing, the golf team rolling, baseball, softball. Get it done this weekend. Everybody go get after it. So good stuff. Appreciate everyone listening. As always, go Pokes!